Good morning, and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer reader, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. The top insights from The Science of a Meaningful Life in 2024. Our team names the most provocative and influential findings published during this past year by Kira M. Newman, Jill Suddy, Emiliana R. Simon Thomas, Miriam Abdullah, Elizabeth Hopper, Edward Limpinen, and Jeremy Adam Smith, December 19, 2024. After a year that feels like it has pushed many of us apart, our selection of the top scientific insights of 2024 are nearly all about how we come together and how we're interconnected across time, distance, and difference. Some insights speak to the ways we can connect with people we disagree with, and how this process isn't as painful as we imagine. Others look at the effects parents have on children, teachers have on students, and plant and animal life have on all of us. One insight is simply about an easy way you can reconnect with someone today. The final insights were selected by experts on our staff after soliciting nominations from our network of nearly 400 researchers. We hope that they inspire you to reach out to others and model the kind of goodness you hope to see in the world. Number one, we're missing out on important happiness insights by overlooking indigenous cultures. Does having more money make you happier? Research findings on this question have been mixed, with some studies suggesting it doesn't and others suggesting it does, and the more money, the better. But a 2024 study by Eric Galbraith of McGill University and his colleagues, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, offers a new perspective on this debate. And their research, based on smaller, rural, often indigenous communities, is also a reminder of the people who are often left out of world happiness surveys and other psychological research, and what we can learn from them about well-being. In the study, Galbraith and his colleagues surveyed almost 3,000 people in small communities, mostly in Asia, Africa, and South America, about their life satisfaction, and then compared their answers to their level of wealth. Since most didn't live in a cash-based economy, their income was calculated based on the value of their assets. Galbraith and his team found that people from these communities were very satisfied with their lives, 6.8 on a scale up to 10, even though most of them lived on less than the equivalent of $1,000 per year. To put that in perspective, people in the 2022 Gallup poll used to create the 2022 World Happiness Report weren't generally that happy until they made at least $25,000 a year. The researchers also found that living in a particular village mattered for life satisfaction, and it had nothing to do with the wealth of that village. This means other non-economic factors likely contributed to the villagers' happiness, like perhaps living in a more interdependent community, being closer to nature, or experiencing lower inequality. Whatever the reason, these findings add more evidence to the debate about the role of money in life satisfaction and hint at other lessons happiness researchers and all of us could learn if psychological research were more inclusive. Small-scale societies living in close contact with nature on the fringes of globalized mainstream society offer distinctly valuable perspectives on the link between wealth and satisfaction, the researchers write. 2. Old friends are an untapped source of connection and well-being. Given the pain of loneliness and the meaning we derive from relationships, you would think we'd be doing all we can to stay connected to others in life. But a 2024 paper reveals a big missed opportunity for connection, old friends. How big is that missed opportunity? Across 6 studies with over 2,500 participants from the US, UK, and Canada, Laurel B. Acknin and Jillian M. Sandstrom found that fewer than 1/3 of people sent a message to an old friend when given time to do so, even though they said they would be happy to reconnect and thought their friend would appreciate it too. Why? According to surveys, the biggest barriers are worries that our friends won't want to hear from us or that it would be awkward. These barriers are hard to overcome. Acknin and Sandstrom tried and failed to ease people's hesitations by reminding them how much they'd appreciate such a note themselves, encouraging them not to listen to their second thoughts, and framing the message as an act of kindness. It turns out that old friends feel like strangers to us, potentially activating all of our misgivings about talking to someone we don't know. People are generally interested in connecting, but prefer that the other person initiate, the researchers explain. At the same time, their research suggests we overestimate how willing other people are to be the ones to initiate, putting us in a bind. However, one tactic did work. If people started by sending a few messages to current friends and acquaintances, basically practicing the act of reaching out, they were more likely to contact an old friend. This paper adds to research suggesting that our assumptions get in the way of our connections in life. For example, we overestimate the discomfort of expressing gratitude, and we underestimate how much compliments and small kindnesses mean to other people and how willing they are to help us. If you find it strangely hard to get in touch with someone after time has passed, you're certainly not alone. But old friends might be just the low-hanging fruit of more connection in life, and they're only a short hello away. 3. A simple 20-second practice can have lasting benefits for stress and mental health. Many of us lead busy, stressful lives, but that put us at risk for burnout. Though different well-being practices could help, like mindfulness meditation or gratitude journaling, for example, we may think we don't have time for them. But what if you could feel significantly better from just 20 seconds of a simple practice. Findings from a new study published in Behavior Research and Therapy suggest that you can. Just 20 seconds of self-compassionate touch daily can calm your nerves and improve your mental health. In this study, led by Eli Sussman, a former Greater Good Science Center research fellow, and his colleagues, 135 young adults were randomly assigned to practice either self-compassionate touch or a dexterity exercise, 20 seconds a day for a month. Self-compassionate touch involved placing a hand over your heart and the opposite hand over your belly. Though people were told they could try other self-soothing touch. The dexterity exercise involved touching various fingers to your thumb in a particular pattern. Participants were also encouraged to pick a cue to help support their practice, something they did every day that might prompt them to do it. Before and after they began practicing, participants filled out questionnaires measuring their self-compassion, positive feelings, anxiety and depression symptoms, and stress. The researchers also measured how much people adhered to their practice over time. When analyzing the results, they found that among people who practiced at least 28 days of the month, those in the self-compassionate touch group had greater self-compassion and they experienced less stress, anxiety, and depression in comparison to the tapping group. As the researchers concluded, daily micro-practices have the potential for augmenting single-session interventions and for offering help when more time-intensive approaches may be less accessible. In other words, you don't need an hour a day to make a difference in your well-being. Even 20 seconds of self-compassionate touch and perhaps other brief practices as well may do the trick. You are listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. 4. We feel better emotionally when we're in biodiverse places, not just basic green spaces. Spending time in green spaces or natural settings increases our well-being and may be especially important for urban dwellers. For example, people feel less anxious, stressed, and depressed walking in a forest versus a cityscape. And people who live near green spaces within a city have better mental health. But what elements of green space promote well-being the most? A new study published this year in Scientific Reports suggests one possible answer: biodiversity. In the study, led by researcher Ryan Hammond of King's College London, almost 2,000 people around the world used the Urban Mind app to record their physical surroundings and assess their well-being in real time over 2 weeks. 3 times a day, they reported on where they were and if they could see any trees or plants, or see or hear any birds or water, indicating how diverse the environment was. They also reported how confident, relaxed, happy, connected to others, and energetic, and how stressed, down, anxious, lonely, and tired they felt in that moment. After analyzing the data, researchers found that people had greater mental well-being in spaces where they could see or hear natural elements, and this effect lasted up to 8 hours. This was true regardless of a person's age, gender, ethnicity, occupation, or education, pointing to the everyday benefits of being exposed to nature, even briefly. But people who experienced more biodiversity in natural environments had even greater well-being, above and beyond the effects of being in nature alone. In fact, for every additional natural element in someone's environment, like a duck or a stream, researchers found an average of 0.91 point increase in mental health scores on a scale up to 50 points. This suggests that ecological diversity within urban spaces is important for people living there. City planners should take note if they want to promote better mental health, said Salmon Hammond and his team. Our study highlights the importance of protecting and promoting natural diversity in our cities, they write. This means moving away from monocultural pockets and parks of mown grass towards polycultural spaces which mimic the biodiversity of natural ecosystems. And number 5 of the top insights from the Science of a Meaningful Life in 2024 is next. And that is entitled, Learning to Be More Forgiving Improves Your Mental Health, No Matter Where You Live. Forgiveness can be a difficult concept to get behind. Holding a grudge sometimes feels easier or more empowering, like a form of revenge or even vindication. But studies consistently report that grudge holding takes a toll on well-being, while forgiveness builds resilience, reduces stress and ill will, and helps us move on constructively. Two large studies in 2024 contribute to current research by finding that forgiveness has mental health benefits for people across the globe and can be taught through community programs as well as individual practices. The first study recruited almost 4,600 people living in places where there had been civil conflict or unrest in the recent past. Hong Kong, Indonesia, Ukraine, Colombia, and South Africa. Study participants were given a forgiveness training workbook on the REACH framework developed by Everett Worthington. Based on surveys before and after, the researchers found that practicing forgiveness reduced people's unforgiveness as well as their symptoms of depression and anxiety. The second study found that forgiveness practices can also be effective when deployed at the community level. Researchers tested a community-wide forgiveness campaign at the Universidad de Sinjo, a private non-religious university in Monteria, Colombia. Professors incorporated forgiveness-related content into their course materials, and the entire campus community was invited to engage in voluntary forgiveness-promoting activities for 4 weeks. The campaign included lectures, online discussions, videos, webinars, and physical installations, like a forgiveness tree. Survey responses from nearly 2,900 students from before and after the campaign showed that they were more willing to forgive family, friends, roommates, and teachers afterward. Students also reported a deeper understanding of the meaning and impact of forgiveness, and again, decreased symptoms of depression and anxiety. While these are not the first findings that illustrate the advantages of forgiving over holding on to animosity, they suggest that learning to forgive can help people from all different backgrounds. Keeping in mind that forgiveness does not imply that you endorse someone's harmful behavior or want to reconcile with them, forgiving past harms is a learnable way to buffer against the risk of feeling depressed and anxious wherever you live in the world. You are listening to Greater Good Magazine, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. And number six on our list is empathy is passed down across at least three generations. Parents play such a meaningful role in their children's well-being and the people their children become. In particular, a 25-year study published in Child Development this year showed how empathy can be passed down through three generations, from parent to child to that child's future children. First, researchers Jessica Stern and her colleagues measured mothers' empathy for their 13-year-olds during a conversation. Next, when the teens were 13 to 19 years old, they measured teens' empathy for their closest friends during another conversation. Later, the researchers followed the teens into parenthood up until their own children were 3 to 8 years old. At that point, they surveyed the second generation's empathy for their children, asking about how they provided supportive responses when their children were distressed. Finally, the second generation parents completed questionnaires about their own young children's empathy. The results? Teens who received greater empathy from their moms tended to show greater empathy to their close friends. In turn, those teens went on to have greater empathy for their children after becoming parents. And in turn, their children tended to have greater empathy for others. These findings suggest that empathy is paid forward across relationships and over time. Teens whose moms are sensitive, emotionally engaged, and supportive learn how to be the same for their close friends. What's more, the researchers say caring for a close friend as a teenager may act as a training ground to help strengthen teens' empathy muscle into adulthood when they become parents. And from there, the cycle continues. This study focused on mothers, but another 2024 study reminds us that fathers matter too. In particular, that fathers' sensitivity to their children's needs seems just as important to children developing a healthy attachment style as their mother's sensitivity. Empathy is key to cultivating and sustaining social connection across the lifespan. While it may be more common to hear about trauma passed down through generations, this research sheds light on the opposite phenomenon, where positive qualities like empathy can pass from parent to child to grandchildren, and likely beyond. And our last of the best articles is, having a conversation with someone we disagree with isn't as awful as we think. We need to communicate with each other if we are to solve society's pressing problems. But 2024 research suggests that we imagine disagreement to be more unpleasant than it actually is, which might contribute to us feeling confrontational and preferring to stay in silos with like-minded peers. Three studies led by Christina Wald found that people underestimate how positive conversations that include disagreement can be. She and her team asked people to imagine a conversation with a stranger who disagreed with them on a controversial topic, like gun control or climate change, and then had a different group of people actually engage in those kinds of conversations. Researchers found that people predict conversations with a stranger will be far less pleasant when they disagree rather than agree, but they actually ended up enjoying their conversations quite a bit, and more than anticipated, whether or not they agree. People also like, feel liked by, and feel more connected with conversation partners than expected, regardless of agreement. Why do we overestimate how unpleasant disagreements are? Another study in 2024 led by Erica Bailey suggests that the internet may be to blame. When her team asked people to recall a recent online debate, roughly half referred to a contentious one and characterized it as negative. But when university students were describing their own debate experiences in general in the past year, they primarily remembered in-person conversations with family and friends. They characterized these interactions as more emotionally nuanced, including feeling positive afterward. Surveys also found that we believe other people have more conflict in their lives than we do, suggesting that disagreement is also less rampant than we think. You have been listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. This is your volunteer reader, Babs Felix, in Green Valley, hoping that you have a wonderful rest of your day, and thank you so much for listening today. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.